My guest at this time is Fabrizio Bavona. He is the author of the book Gone But Not Forgotten, Tributes to Voices Not Heard. He is also the only survivor from his 9/11 first responder, firefighter, and paramedic rescue group that reported to the World Trade Center, of course, in the wake of those terrorist planes striking the World Trade Centers and their subsequent collapse. And, sir, it's an honor to have you with us. Thank you for your time today.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate you taking the time.
I'm sure the memories of that day are as vivid, if not more vivid, than anything else from your professional career. Just go back to that day as you learned about the crisis at the World Trade Center and how you and your unit responded.
Well, I actually was working on the New Jersey side. I'm a paramedic by trade for 30 years. I'm an RN, I'm a volunteer firefighter, and I'm a police officer. And through the course of that year, you have, you know, a wide array of partners. That particular day, I was actually stationed in New Jersey overlooking the World Trade Center. And I saw heard the first plane in and saw the second plane. And after the collapse of the first tower, I immediately responded over there, knowing that guys from my unit, guys that I had worked with in the past, were already in the building. And I arrived just after the second tower was coming down. It culminated the top of a 30-year career. I mean, I thought I'd seen it all, and nothing really could have prepared you for that particular day. The images of the people that were standing outside the window, preparing, you could see them. They're frantically waving these white towels. And quite frankly, they were all doomed. Everyone above the 78th floor in the South Tower and the 93rd floor on the North Tower had no way to get out. Everything beneath them was burning. There was 10,000 gallons of fuel per each building. And they were starting to jump. And they weren't one or two people. You had groups of people, five or six at a time, that were holding hands and were stepping off. They were doing this throughout the limited time that we were doing the rescue. And it struck me because I couldn't imagine going from a beautiful, serene day that they must have been having to making the conscious decision from an upper floor to your obvious death. That image really stuck in my mind.
Tell us a little bit about your unit and how it turned out that you were the only one who survived. Where did your fellow paramedics and firefighters end up going where they ended up losing their lives?
Yeah, we were in a specific unit at the time. These were my former partners that had gone on to become Port Authority police officers. I became a police officer in another jurisdiction. Because they were Port Authority, they went in as part of the first wave, where a few of us, the others, we were told to stand back because at the initial attacks, they had more than enough personnel to handle the emergency. They had more than enough firefighters, police officers, EMS. And they were doing exactly what they should be doing, is getting ready to ship out the potentially thousands of victims that were coming out of the World Trade Center. What no one realized was that the tower was going to come down and kill the majority of responders who had gone there. And this changed the dynamic of the entire event. When that first tower came down, that's when I proceeded over to at least try to help the people that I knew had to be trapped or killed at that particular point. And I knew that my guys that I've grown up with were absolutely in the building, and it turned out they were.
You mentioned that you arrived at the World Trade Center right as the second one had come down. What did you do then? How did you try to help, given all that chaos and all that ash flooding the area?
It was extremely challenging. I mean, again, if you're not from the New York area, if you weren't here that day, it looked like there were just two towers hit. In actuality, there were 16 acres completely decimated by the attacks. There were 16 acres of buildings, cars, stores were on fire, were exploding, and the approach wasn't the sidewalk. It all but disappeared. There was several feet of solid steel debris and wiring, literally for the full 16 acres. So you had to trek across all of this, and as I was going in, what I was encountering was injured people that were starting to come out or were stopped. And what truly touched me was the fact that immediately I wanted to go over and start treating them, try to help them. And from the first to the last, each and every one of them told them, please, I'm not bad. The guys, they're far worse inside. And they kept moving you forward to get me right into the heart of Ground Zero. And that level of selflessness continued not only during that event, but for the days and months to follow, where people really cared little to nothing of themselves and were truly overwhelmingly concerned for their neighbor, for the strangers, for everyone else. And as I approached the World Trade Center there, the Ground Zero, it was eerily absent of people, eerily absent of sound. The only sound you heard, and if you're a paramedic or firefighter for any period of time, you're going to have the misfortune of going on calls where some of your brothers or sisters will have died. And a firefighter wears a chirping alarm that goes on their equipment. And when you go horizontal for more than 30 seconds, that alarm is activated, and it lets out this sharp chirp. And any time I've ever heard that chirp in my career, it symbolized the death of a fellow coworker or a brother. And this day, you didn't hear one chirp, but you heard hundreds of these chirping sounds coming across the entire 16 acres from at least two or three dozen buildings and the wreckage that was, you know, spewed throughout that entire area. And that sound, each one of those chirps represented the death of one of the firefighters. And that was as eerie a feeling as I could ever feel, as lonely a feeling as you could ever feel. That's something else I took away from the day.
Absolutely.
Plus the fact of the look of defeat. And it wasn't so much defeat, but it was an emptiness that I'd never seen in a coworker before. We're used to seeing something and everyone competes more or less to figure out what's the best strategy to attack it or to deal with it. And there wasn't that look that day. There was a different type of look, one that I had never seen before or since.
Well, we know from just the numbers from that day that, what was it, over 70 police officers, 343 firefighters. What did that do, both near-term and long-term, to the psyche as well as just the ability of first responders in that area to be in a position to respond?
Everyone continued. I mean, the mindset among first responders, and I'll speak for myself and the majority, I would think, is, you know, you're always looking for the solution. I mean, what was driving me was hoping to reach into a hole or dig something out or find something where I was able to pull somebody out. And if anything, it increased our resolve, I would think. It definitely increased mine. I mean, I was more passionate about trying to get in there and finding somebody or getting somebody than I ever was. But long term, it's had a significantly negative impact. I mean, since 9/11, more than 2,000 first responders and people exposed to that toxic dust have died directly related to 9/11 illnesses. Tens of thousands are sick and getting worse every day. And so for the long term, what I don't see is a real stewardship by a government that welcomed all the help and support, but has all but turned their back on all first responders since the events.
We're talking with Fabrizio Bavona, and in our remaining moments here, Fabrizio, I want to talk about your book, Gone But Not Forgotten. It's a five-year effort to put this together to make sure that those who did give their lives in efforts to save their neighbors and to respond to a horrific disaster are not forgotten. What will folks learn about your friends and former colleagues when they read this book?
Well, the feedback I've gotten from people is overwhelming. I've gotten, this is the most powerful book I've ever read. Some people take months to read it. They'll only go several pages at a time, but they say they also can't put it down. The book, what I tried to do, it was an answer to a question my partner's 8-year-old daughter had, which was, why did my father leave me in the safety of New Jersey and go into New York and die? And I really you grappled with the answer to that question because I have to get her to understand who her father was and what drove him. Because what drives him, what drove the 343 firefighters plus all the others in the EMS, is something that is counterintuitive to most people. And so I tried to figure out a way to try to explain a world of first responders that most people really don't have any idea. Everybody got a glimpse into it on 9/11. That's not unique. 9/11 was unique in the magnitude of the size, but not in the magnitude of the sacrifice or commitment. While we're speaking right now, there are people around the country committing those same exact acts of sacrifice and compassion and are giving up their lives for those same ideals. And the book, what I tried to do is really try to get people to walk the steps of first responders. The photos in there are mine, the majority. And it really tries to get you to understand a level of compassion, a level of care, and a level where people say, my life isn't as important as my neighbor's. And that's what the book attempts to do. It attempts to honor our fallen. It's got several stories. There were thousands of stories to sacrifice that day. Thousands. In fact, there was one where several firefighters coming down the stairs with an elderly woman. And right around the between the fourth and sixth floor, this woman couldn't go any further. She was in her 70s. They'd already come down 60 flights of stairs. She gave up. And she told them, I cannot go on any further. I'm an older lady. I've lived a full life. There's no reason you need to stay. And she would try and tell them to leave. And, you know, they were saying, okay, well, I'll stay and you guys go. And the fight was, you know, who was going to stay? And they were all fighting to stay. Ultimately, they all decided they were all going to stay. They would not leave her and they would not leave each other. And their main purpose at that particular point was to now shield her body. And they put her in a door jamb and they protected her as the buildings collapsed. And they knew they were going to die. The irony is that had they have looked out for themselves, they would have been killed. Because the only segment of both towers that remained was that staircase between the fourth and sixth floor. And that's the type of story, those are the type of stories that I try to convey so that people really have a whole different understanding, a whole different perspective of what went on 9/11. I want them to see something beyond the regurgitated video footage and really understand what kind of love of compassion that occurred that day.
Well, the book itself is a great service to the nation for that very reason, Fabrizio, and we certainly honor them for their service. Many of those who, of course, sacrificed their lives. We thank you for your service on that day and throughout the years that you've vowed to protect those in your community. Thank you, sir, very much. We thank you for your time today.
Well, thank you very much. And if people want to look at the book, they can go on 911usahope.com.
Again, the website. Absolutely. Again, the website, which we'll mention again, 911usahope.com. The book is Gone But Not Forgotten, Tributes to Voices Not Heard. The author is Fabrizio Bavona, who's been with us for the past several minutes. He's the only survivor from his 9/11 first responder, firefighter, paramedic rescue group at the World Trade Center at Ground Zero. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.